you find the same prophecy in Ezekiel 38 and verse 12. It speaks of Israel living at the center of the world. The word center there in the Hebrew is translated as from the Hebrew word that basically means navel or belly button. Just as the belly button is the center of the body, when God looks at the earth and He sees Israel and He sees Jerusalem, He sees her as the center of the entire world. Why is that? Because it's the only nation started independent of the idolatry at the Tower of Babel. It's the only nation originally created that wasn't contaminated by the mother-child cult. And it's a nation specifically set aside by God for the purpose of mediating or bringing forth His messianic promises to the world. So that answers Roman numeral 1, doesn't it? What is the divine purpose for the nation of Israel? Well, let's go to Roman numeral 2. What is then the divine protection for the nation of Israel? See, the moment God puts His hand of blessing on something, what do you think Satan is going to try to do? To destroy it. That's why Satan is at war with you as a Christian. Because God has placed His hand of blessing on you. And consequently, we learn in Ephesians 6 that we wrestle not against what? Flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of this world. See, you've got to be careful before you ask for God's blessing. Because the moment you get His blessing, you get spiritual opposition from the dark side. And this is why Satan hates Israel. Satan has always worked in history to blot out Israel. And he's always used fallen people to accomplish his goal. So that's why God here at the beginning has to give Israel promises. One of which is, and the one who curses you, I will what? I will curse. How literal is that? Well, let me ask you a question. Why is it that when you read the book of Exodus and you read about plague number 10, why is it that God killed the firstborn, Exodus 11, all over the land of Egypt? I mean, why didn't God kill the secondborn or the thirdborn? Well, the answer you'll find in Exodus 4, verse 22, where God calls Israel His firstborn what? Son. And He says to Egypt, you mess with my firstborn son, I'm coming after your firstborn son. Have you ever asked the question, why is it that God, when the Red Sea was parted, why did He drown the Egyptian army? I mean, God could have killed the Egyptian army any way He wanted. He could have killed them through hurricane, tornado, lightning, starvation, famine. He specifically chose, when He brought judgment, to drown that army. Why is that? Well, you'll find the answer in Exodus 1, verse 22. What were the Egyptians doing to the Hebrew children? Drowning them in the Nile. God says, you drown my people, I'll drown you. You see how literal Genesis 12 and verse 3 is? The one who curses you, I will curse. Have you read Zechariah 2 and verse 8 lately? For he who touches you, Israel, touches the what? The apple of his eye, interpreted by many as the pupil of his eye. You come against Israel, it's like taking your finger and jamming it into the eyeball of the Almighty. Do you see an expiration date on any of these promises? This promise is good until. There's no expiration date here at all. This is a universal principle that the Creator Himself has established. And you go right through biblical history and you'll run into a bunch of nations that at one time were world powers. And God stamped an expiration date on each of those empires. Why? Because at some point they turned against the nation of Israel. Nebuchadnezzar saw the whole thing in a dream in Daniel 2. Daniel saw the same thing through looking at various beasts in a vision in Daniel 7. First, there would be Babylon, which was a worldwide power. Babylon existed from about 605 to 539. Why did Babylon go out of existence? Because they came against Israel. Then came the Medes and the Persians, which would exist from about 539 to 331. Same pattern, expiration date stamped on that nation. Then would come Greece from about 331 to 63 BC. Same pattern. They came against the nation of Israel, and God put an expiration date on Greece. Then came Rome, a worldwide power, coming to power in the land of Israel about 63 BC. And what did Rome do to Israel? Drove them out of their land in AD 70, and a few centuries later, Rome went out of existence. You see the pattern here? Isn't it interesting that Rome was a worldwide power, a Latin-speaking people, and they came against the nation of Israel in AD 70? And what do we have today? Rome is gone, but Israel remains. Latin is a dead language. The Hebrew language is an alive language. You see the hand of God here in history? It's all an outworking of what He originally said to Abram back in Genesis chapter 12. And people say, well, this can't apply. I mean, don't you understand that the nation of Israel is in disobedience? Have you looked recently at the structure of the book of Ezekiel? Chapters 1 through 24 in the book of Ezekiel, and we're going to be going through the book of Ezekiel in this conference in one of my sessions. I don't know how I'm going to finish the whole thing in an hour, so you'll have to pray for me. But Ezekiel 1 through 24 is all condemnation against Judah because of disobedience to God. And then you move to that middle section of the book of Ezekiel, chapters 25 through 32, where God starts to condemn the nations around the nation of Israel. He condemns the nations to the east of Israel, Ammon, Moab, and Edom. To the west, Philistia. To the north, Tyre and Sidon. To the south, Egypt. Here's a map there of those various nations. Why does God condemn them? Because they came against Israel. Even while Israel was in unbelief, God kept a record of what they did. They came against His people. They thought they could somehow profit through Israel's demise. And God, in chapters 25 through 32 of the book of Ezekiel, holds all of those nations accountable and announces judgment upon them. You see, this is all an outworking, if you will, of Genesis 12 and verse 3. This is the significance of the nation of Israel from the divine point of view. But guess what? The opposite is true. God not only says, I will curse those who curse you, but what else does He say? I will bless those who bless you. Now, what side of that equation do you want to be on? Do you want to be on the cursing side or do you want to be on the blessing side? Frankly, I'll take the blessing side. Now, I'm an American. I speak from the perspective of an American. Most people look today at the United States of America as a blessed nation, not a perfect nation. A world power. But most Americans do not have the foggiest idea as to why God has blessed the United States of America. You talk to three Americans, you'll get five answers concerning why is our nation blessed. And you'll get answers about, you know, our crops, our stock market, our banks, our this, our that. If you want to know the secret of America's greatness, you travel to a synagogue in Rhode Island, which is on our east coast. It's called the Toro Synagogue. It's the first synagogue ever built in the United States of America. And it's a synagogue that George Washington, our first president, the father of the United States of America, visited. And he visited that synagogue August 18th, I believe it was, 1790. And he wrote the inhabitants or the worshippers at this synagogue a letter, if I have the story straight, the same day.